Actor and activist Evan Rachel Wood speaks with Trevor Noah on The Daily Show about surviving trauma and speaking out.
You talk about a topic that I think is one of the more sensitive topics that we're discussing in society today, but also one of the more pertinent topics that we're discussing in society today. And it's in and around the issue of abuse, mm-hmm. you know, sexual abuse, which, as we learned from the Me Too movement, is far more rampant than people would have wanted to admit or even some people realized. And you've created a documentary here. Let's start with the why, maybe. And not why the documentary, but the timing of the documentary. Mm-hmm. So many people want to let go of pain in their life. So many people want to move on. It feels like you've done the exact opposite. You've gone back into the pain. You've gone back into the story. Why and why now?
Well, it is 16 years later. So I do get a lot of people commenting on how I'm able to speak about things and put on a brave face and how strong I am. But it took 16 years to get here. And the first thing that I did when I got out was try to get as far away from it as possible, try to forget it ever happened. You're running. You're trying to forget that it ever happened.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it catches up with you, and I couldn't run from it. The trauma started to seep into other areas of my life. So I threw myself in a therapy, which I highly recommend if you have the resources. Unfortunately, yeah, yeah. In this country, you know, mental health is not always at the top of the list. And really, I was planning on taking this to my grave. I really was not planning on saying anything ever. I was that afraid. And that afraid of retaliation. I just did not feel safe, and I felt very alone. I thought I was the only one. And you'll hear that a lot from abuse survivors. When I first was asked to testify for the Sexual Assault Survivors Bill of Rights in front of Congress about my story, I really thought that was going to be it. I thought, okay, here, I'm going to tell my story, and that's it. I'm going to be done. And then women started popping up, and men online, that had eerily similar stories, but new details that I knew they weren't lying. There were very, very specific details that there's just no way you could know those things unless you were toe-to-toe with that person. So I knew it was real, and that's when it changed. That's when I knew I couldn't stay quiet.
You know, when you say that person, I guess one of the reasons the story is as big as it is not just because of what happened, but it's because of who it involves.
Yes.
You know, you named Marilyn Manson. In cases of abuse, oftentimes we think of it as being black or white, good and bad.
Yes.
You know, there are layers to people which make it complicated. And you've talked about his history. You've talked about, you know, his history with abuse. You've talked about his history with, you know, the issues that he deals with mentally, etc. Mm-hmm. I found that particularly interesting because I felt it cloudies a subject that is already quite complicated, mm-hmm. and yet because of that, it deserves to be part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Why did you feel it necessary to say, hey, this is the person who abused me, and this person also suffered abuse, and this person is also going through things? Why do that knowing that it would then, you know, almost cloud some people's judgment in like who's guilty or who's not, or even who's accountable sometimes?
Of course, and that's it can definitely get complicated in that way, because I do believe in accountability and healing and reform, and I think there is a time and a space for that, and I think we need to leave more space for accountability, otherwise nobody's going to be accountable.
Right.
But I just knew we're never going to get to the root of this problem if we don't go into the background and the root and the cause, because violence in the home is the root of so many issues in this country, in the world. It bleeds into almost every area of society, and we don't even realize it. And violence begets violence. It is a cycle. There are people that can stop the cycle, and there are some people, I feel, like Brian, that don't want help. And he's had every opportunity. He's had so many people try, and he has refused it every time. I don't know how much I can say, but there have been allegations and stories that have come out on the internet that involve minors, and you got to draw the line somewhere. And with children, I have to draw the line there. I don't believe that he will stop until he is stopped. And sometimes the greatest act of love is stopping that person from hurting themselves or hurting anybody else.
We in society often say, we go, well, why didn't you do it sooner? Why didn't you come forward sooner? And so I would love to know from you how you think time affects the mental state, the relationship, and the entire world of somebody who's experienced sexual abuse.
People underestimate the power of that kind of trauma and what it does to your body and to your brain. And there's so many studies to back this up. And this is what the laws do not reflect, is the effects of trauma on the brain. And a lot of people, when they think they know how they're going to respond to a situation like that, but until you're in a life-threatening situation and you're doing risk assessment and you're in survival mode, and you're going to have that fight, flight, or freeze response, sometimes all three, you're just trying to survive that moment and get the least amount of damage, you know? And then once you're out, again, like I said, your body and your brain do backflips to protect you from the pain. And that's how denial comes into play. That's how, you know, addiction comes into play, bad coping mechanisms, because you're just trying to bury, because to face it, to face the reality is almost unbearable. I think on average it takes people 7 to 10 years to be able to process, understand, heal, and be able to put things in chronological order.
Singer, songwriter, voice actress and director Sia Furler talks with Dr. Gabor Mate for the Talks on Trauma interviews.
My goal at the moment is not to make movies or songs or anything, but it's to earn secure attachment. That's been my goal for the last 5 years. And so when I read that, you know, you guys were doing this, and I'm a trauma baby. So I think pretty much everyone in Hollywood, I think, you know, we tap dance the hardest. Do you know what I mean? We tap dance the hardest, and we...
Well, that brings me to, well, there's so many things I want to ask you, but one of them is, I'll come to what you just said about the trauma in Hollywood. I really want to explore that with you. But before I go there, I just want to talk to you personally. And, you know, I do probe pretty directly. So if you've anything I ask you're not comfortable with, just let me know.
Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you talked about being a trauma baby. And in one of the interviews, you said that there's a desperate energy about you. Now, now years ago, I saw your video of Chandelier, where there's what seems to me like a younger version of yourself frantically dancing away. And there's such a desperate energy about that child, if I can put it that way, in that video. Tell me about your desperation. You say you don't have it anymore, but tell me about that child's desperation. What is that for you?
I do have it, and it does get triggered occasionally. I think I just didn't know what was wrong with me. I felt like I wasn't made for this planet. I felt sensitive, hypersensitive. I couldn't maintain love, like romantic relationships for very long, at 2.5 years or 3 maybe. But, you know, I realized I had about 5-6 years ago, I met George Haas, who's my attachment mentor, and he's a meditation teacher. And so I started working with him, and the last 6 years I've actually been more desperate than ever before, because to walk through the valley of death is just so heartbreaking. When you have to let your parents go and you have to realize that they can never come back and reparent you, that you have to do it yourself. And that, you know, my family friend said that he came over one day when I was a baby and he heard me crying, and the door was locked. So he climbed in the window and he found me crying in my cot. And my dad was upstairs asleep. And so I know that happened once. So I can only imagine, because of my first attachment assessment inventory came back as unresolved, complexly disorganized, at the time it was called Fearful Avoidant, Complexly Fearful Avoidant. And I was I've been addicted to alcohol, pills, benzos, you name it. Love. And that's primarily what's really helped me as well is the SLAA, this 12-step program, which that they don't use attachment language, but we're all trying to help each other. It's like 1,000 mothers in a room.
I understand. The one problem I have with I love the 12 steps. I think
that name is the worst name ever.
Yeah. But the steps themselves are profound.
Yeah.
The one problem I have is they keep insisting that addiction is a disease.
Yes, I agree with you that it's an attachment disorder or an attachment injury.
Well, I won't even agree with that.
What do you think it is?
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. If we don't look at it as a disorder, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
The alcohol, the pill, whatever you were using at any one time, what did they do for you in the short term?
Well, they were the solution. They were. They helped me survive.
What did they give you in the short term?
Just the will to live.
Okay. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Good.
So what kind of a disorder gives you a will to live? In other words, I don't see it as a disorder. I see it as a solution to a problem.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It is. You're right. It is a solution to a problem. And it worked until it didn't. And then you have to do the work if you want to earn secure or you want. Do you think you're secure now?
You know, my attachment, I've been married 52 years now.
Yeah, I think you're secure. Yeah.
No, yeah, but my default setting is withdrawal. And again, if we don't look at them as a disorder, like what I want to encourage here is a view of these conditions, not as disorders, but as normal responses to life.
Yeah.
See related article for more comments by artists and psychologists, videos, plus links to resources to relieve stress and support healing from trauma.